Welcome to the Pharma Forum podcast. This is web editor Nicole Riley, and today I'm joined by a group of expert individuals here to discuss not just women's health and equality, but female leaders within life sciences, this being Women's History Month, and indeed the day on which we're recording being, in fact, International Women's Day. My guests for this discussion include Trina Bartoldi, Chief Innovation Officer at the Bioinnovation Institute, or BII, who leads the Women's Health Initiative there, aiming to strengthen the European ecosystem for innovative translational research and startups that address the high unmet needs within women's health. The BII's dedicated Women's Health Initiative is part of the BII's Bio Studio program for entrepreneurial researchers looking to translate their science into innovative products and solutions. With her is Karen Lika Hartmann, CEO and founder of Notify Therapeutics, a Danish biotech company developing a hormone-free fertility treatment. Also joining us today is Julia Sandskovsted, co-founder and CCO of OasiCare, which aims to improve women's health during childbirth and postpartum. And last, but by no means least, is Mai Hetjan, who is an entrepreneur in residence for the Cure Me project in BII's Bio Studio program, which will harness the development of an organoid biobank into an endometriosis drug discovery and screening platform. Welcome, ladies. Now, as listeners might know, the BII is an incubator based in Denmark, which supports world-class life sciences innovation and to date has supported 100 startups with a total of 97 million euros in funding. A key focus for the BII is to champion diversity in teams across its startups, projects, and staff. 55% of its startups include a female founder. It's fair to say that this is much more gender diverse than the wider life sciences industry. Exactly zero of the highest paid medtech and biopharma CEOs and R&D executives in 2023 were women, according to a recent industry analysis. And a 2021 report by the Bedford Group and Transsearch found that out of 1,254 industry board members analysed, women made up just 14%. The programme is currently looking for non-hormonal therapeutics and evidence-based health tech solutions for female-specific conditions. Those female-specific conditions include gynecological diseases such as PCOS or polycystic ovary syndrome, endometriosis and vaginal dysbiosis, as well as maternal health, inclusive of issues such as preeclampsia or preterm birth, and menstrual health and menopause symptoms. The elephant in the room is that women's health is underaddressed. It has long been seen as a taboo topic even, and is rarely discussed. But it will be discussed today, and it is imperative to educate communities on women's health and to ensure research and advancements can be made. And the Women's Health Initiative aims to help focus minds to find therapies for this underserved patient group. And so, to my guests, to begin with, can each of you tell me, tell listeners, what International Women's Day means to you personally and how you celebrate it? Perhaps we'll start with you, Trina.
Yeah, thank you, Nicole. I think it's a very important yearly reminder in our very busy work days, actually, where we are. And do ask yourself, how has this last year been? Do we see any progress on the stuff that's important for us on this important theme? So I think it's a good day to remember and look back and then look forward.
Thank you. And how about Karen?
Yes, sure. I mean, to me, the International Women's Day confirm to me the effort that many people actually do to secure that we have equal terms for both sexes in many of the topics that is on the awareness today. And how I celebrate it is basically hoping that I work to make a difference on this matter one day.
Absolutely. Maj?
Yes. So for me personally, this is a day where I feel very proud of all the achievements that are made by all the many talented and strong women out there. And I see it as an encouraging call for action to really continue the mission of creating greater equality for all the women all over the world. And being a mother of two daughters, this mission lies very close to my heart.
Thank you. And Julia?
Yeah, for me, it's a day of gratitude and just acknowledging all the strong women who have been here fighting for us to have a right to vote and a right to be where we're at right now. And we celebrated it with cake in the office.
Very nice indeed. Gratitude and remnant purpose. And so we head forth into our podcast today. So let's now consider perceptions of women's roles and contributions and how they've evolved globally in recent years, particularly in the life sciences, obviously. Who wants to start?
I can do that. So I have to say that I don't think we can look at it globally because there seem to be a lot of differences between the countries. And just yesterday, I was at a semi-depressing event hosted by Women in Life Science Denmark, which is an organization working for more equality and equity within the life science industry. And we still see a big difference also in Denmark. I think we rank in the World Economic Forum, we rank around 70 or 28 or something. So even though you may think that we may be doing good in the Nordics, there's a big difference in between countries. So I think we can address it globally, but we certainly have to think about it at a national level as well. And I don't think we have come as far as we would have been if I talk on behalf of Denmark, at least. We still have a lot to do, even though more than 50% of the students within the life science degrees are women. It's still only 20% who has actually senior leadership positions. Also, when it comes to salary, there's a big disparity, and we see 20% differences in salary at the lower titles and up to 70% at the higher titles. So it seems like the higher you get, the more difference between salaries as well. So there's still a lot to be done, even in a country like Denmark.
Thank you, Trina. Does anyone else want to sort of contribute to that?
Well, I can just echo a little bit on what Trina is saying, because we see the same also now. My background is more in the university and I'm coming into biotech, and we see that in the early student years, we have many, many women also being part of the classes. But when we came to higher levels, you know, it's filtering out a bit. So kind of my reflection on if the perception of women's role and contribution have evolved globally, I'm also really careful to say anything about the global situation. And I think it's really, really emphasizes how necessary it is that we keep this awareness and we maintain the awareness in all countries. And that also includes Denmark, because I agree with Trine that we are far from where we would really ideally like to be.
Far from equality, basically. How about Maj or Julia? Do you want to weigh in here?
Yeah, I think it was BII who made a tote bag merchandise for Bornholm that said, "Women are not small men." And I think that with that acknowledgement, a whole blue ocean is appearing within women's health. And that's what I'm seeing happening right now. We can look back and say that the society has been built by men, but I also see that there are some optimism around how we as women also are having a way louder voice now, and that's interesting and super exciting. But yeah, we are not even halfway there. I echo that.
Mm. Yeah. So maybe. To add, so I think the positive part is, of course, that there are changes being made and that things are getting better. And I think especially that you start seeing more women in prominent positions, for example, in politics, but also in other sectors such as the life science industry. So I think that is a good way to go, because by having more women in these positions, you will go in the right direction. But I completely echo what has been said. And I was to the same event where Trina was yesterday. And there was also a report where actually the conclusion said that the biggest hurdle for labor market success in Denmark is being a woman. And I mean, that is really horrible when looking at different factors. So this is, of course, totally unacceptable. And I think that in general, and it's also been mentioned here, that I think we are thinking that we are actually doing pretty well in Denmark when you would ask people. But when you then look at statistics and more into the detail, we realize that we are far from there. So this is a very important mission.
Yeah, and I actually think that you had one important word there, Mai, in terms of visibility, because it's quite clear that if you don't have the visibility, I mean, you often say you can't be what you can't see. I think that has a certain degree of truth, but if we can't see it, then we need somebody to really push for it and someone to drive it until we can actually see it. So I think we have a lot of work to do there, and you can see, even me as being a CXO, I get a female CXO, I get a lot of questions from the young women around me here in the community, how I could do it. And I have to say, I've been in the industry for more than 20 years, and I'm really surprised that there's still such a glass ceiling, or whatever you want to call it, that it's still a thing for the younger generation. And I have been taken by surprise how big an issue it still is, I have to say. So creating more visibility, but that does not come automatically. We need to drive it, and we need to keep pushing for it. And it needs to come from both men and women, that's for certain.
Yes, the glass ceiling certainly still needs breaking through. So these key foci of visibility and awareness, but maintaining a positivity, because there is progress happening, but far, far slower than should be. So if we stick with you for a second, Trina, in what ways do you see women impacting industries traditionally dominated by men? And how can we encourage more diversity and inclusivity?
I think we are impacting it very slowly. I mean, even a large company like Novo Nordisk, they have tried to drive this agenda for quite some years, but you still see at the very, very top of it, it's still pretty male dominated. So even though you're a big resourceful company with a great purpose, it still takes time. But I do believe that in general in our industry, we start to see more and more female influence. Also in academia, Karen being a star example of a female professor driving it and even moving into the entrepreneurship. That's a true role model, whether you like it or not, Karen. But that's visibility for you. So I do start to see that we get more and more women in invisible roles that can drive it. The way we influence it, it's a good question. I hate to say that there are masculine leadership and female leadership, but in some ways there are. And at least what I have learned from 20 years in the industry, also being in the financial industry in my younger years, which was also heavily male dominated. I think this very action-oriented leadership style is important, and you do need to create results, but there's also much more when it comes to driving a fruitful business and driving for impact. So I think slowly we are starting to be generally more and more mission-oriented and maybe having a larger focus on the impact we are driving in the organizations we are in. At least we are very lucky here at the Bioinnovation Institute that it is okay to talk about the mission and the actual impact we are driving for people and society. And I think that will slowly spread out so people, whether it's women or feminine leadership style, I don't know, but that we can actually put words and create the motivation toward creating more impact rather than just going for the EBITDA, if you could put it that way. So whether you call it masculine or feminine, I don't know, but I can certainly see the women I surround myself with are highly mission and impact oriented. And that starts to spread out in the organizations.
Yes, as you say, there's no longer this need to perhaps distinguish between active players in this this seeking rightful equality between men and women. Because if you look, not to bring into it, but to mention it, if you look towards feminism today, that includes men as well as women in this drive for equality. Before we focus on the specific work of the BII, perhaps Karen, you could comment as example that Trina just made of you as someone in the field. How important for you is it for both men and women to actively support gender equality? And what are some practical ways we can do this in our daily lives?
Yes, I mean, good question. So I think we all agree that that when we have to secure the equity between the sexes, it has to come from both sexes, right? Otherwise, you will have this big gap of half of the world will be wanting one value chain and the other another one. And that goes for many areas in women and male. I mean, we have to understand that there are fundamental differences. There are things we cannot change. Some women, you know, women get pregnant, men don't. I mean, there are things we cannot change, but it doesn't mean that there should not be equity between, you know, all the other terms, you know, in case of treatment and the health, and especially, as Trine said, in salaries. And I think these are very important things that needs to be in place, and it needs to be something that is lifted together, so that we don't have these headlines in newspapers saying, oh, we again see that two people with the same skills and the same, you know, job descriptions are paid differently because one is a man and one is a woman. That will not work. So we have to get rid of that, and we have to be, you know, working on equal terms and equal salaries. I don't know if I know specifically how to do it. I just know that, you know, sometimes you have to be, and coming, you know, back to very basic things, sometimes you just have to be very brave, right? And it goes, you know, if you're a man or if you're a woman, be brave, you know, just impact, you know, on what you feel is right, and not to be afraid of going for something that you believe in. Maybe others have questioned it, maybe other things, oh, it doesn't used to be like that, or, you know, I've seen other people, you know, you don't always have to listen to advice, you know, be brave and go for what you believe in. And yes, that's the way I made my way through from academic into to the biotech. You know, I really believe in what I'm doing, and of course I care what other people say, but you know, I believe in what I have to do.
Absolutely, as you say, doing the right thing and believing in yourself and setting aside any fear that might be. There's that old expression of everything you ever wanted is on the other side of fear, and perhaps true equality is there. Julia or Madge, did you want to add anything here?
Okay, I think it's super relevant with the representation. And now I don't know you yet, Karen, but I see that it's nice to have people I can mirror myself in that are leaders. Because having and you, Madge, I guess, I don't yet. Because I think that the mirroring is super important so that we don't lose our opportunities as more female-led leadership style, because like just becoming a leader now and having the insecurity of not fitting into that box that is super stereotypical because it's made by men, is super relevant to also just bring up and share feelings about, because yeah, I think we really have some reflections to do on that topic, and super relevant perspective as females bringing leadership to the next level.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I can add there maybe, so I've been working as a leader for many years in both the biotech and pharma industry, and I would really say this, and it's come through by others also, to have some role models out there, because there are not that many. The majority of people in higher positions have often been men. So I think this is something that can encourage women to take a similar path. If they, again, the visibility, if they see people more like them taking on the same kind of positions or more business related positions. So I think that is really important. But I also think that the companies and also academia have an important role themselves to play in really making sure and ensuring that there are equal opportunities for both women and men for taking on a leadership track. You will have all these different development tracks, but to make sure that there are equal opportunities, and also that everybody can get the support they need according to their own needs in order to really unleash their full potential. Because it might be that men and women, or I also don't want to put it as men and women, but different people will need a different kind of support to fully unleash their potential. So I think instead of having it only a one way how you should do it, you should think and look more at the individuals, because that is the way how you can really build talent or a diverse talent pool.
Absolutely. So as much as we're here discussing having had enough of trying to fit into the patriarchal box, so too is individualism within that women's sphere. So now if we stick with your great notion of role models, Mash, let's turn to something that's actively happening in the field. And that is, of course, the BII's Women's Health Initiative. So why was it important for the BII to set up a Women's Health Initiative?
Actually, I would like to make a very clear distinction of the themes here, because one thing is about equality between men and women in the leadership position and in the life science industry per se. The other thing is women's health. It may be part of the same equation, but I think in order to be successful in any of them, we also need to distinguish a bit between them. It all comes back to the same thing. I think Julia mentioned this earlier about the world being designed for men primarily. So the wording we have, the merge we have here at BII, that women are not small men, actually derives from how clinical trials traditionally were done, which was basically to bring in men. And then you would just do a pro rata on the women's body weight. And then you say, okay, women are small men. So if we need one mic drug for this indication, then we just take half of it for women because they weigh more or less half of a man. So that was why we came up with that wording. Now, why did we think that was important? So the basic mission in BII, that is to translate amazing science into actual solutions to benefit people and society. So this is the mission we are being born with as a non-for-profit foundation. And then if you look at where we see the highest unmet needs, we could clearly see a couple of years ago that research being undertaken in the women's health space was highly underfunded and underrepresented. So 1-2%, if you look into the McKinsey and the Forbes reports, 1-2% of the spending within R&D goes to women's health in area. And of course, women's health is many things. So you also have to define that a little bit, maybe. So it's both indication specifically for women. It's also indications where women represent themselves differently, which could be the CNS area, and it could also be where women are overrepresenting, the cardiovascular area is somewhere where we differentiate ourselves quite different from men. And then you also have some indications where we are higher represented, such as Alzheimer's disease, certain CNS areas, etc. So you have to look into that. There are actually a lot of diseases which is also relevant for men, but where we are simply understudied and under-understood. So we could see that there was a high unmet need there. And then quickly, we started to include some academic projects, research projects, and tried to see if we could put them on the translational route. And we started to get some good traction. And we actually, very early on, also had a big success in a non-hormonal contraceptive startup, which was within a few years sold off to Organon, one of the few pharma players in the space. So we took a stand and said, okay, we want to do something more devoted here to see if we can drive a change. And that is not only about incubating companies. What we also need to do is to see how we can strengthen the entire ecosystem, which actually goes all the way from research towards incubation, engaging with the venture capitalists, engaging with the industry who's there, even engaging with the regulatory authorities, because this is an ecosystem issue. It's a fragmented value chain, and we need to work together from academia all the way to the industry to actually do something meaningful about this. And that is also what we have done. We have created an amazing international network now. So, we have created a strong hub here in Denmark already within a few years. So there was a strong need. We were actually right about that.
Yes, definitely right. Thank you for that, Trina. So could you perhaps share an example of a successful initiative or program that has empowered women at the BII?
Yeah, so this again, important that that's women's health, which is one thing, and then we have female empowerment. That's another thing I have to say. Yeah, so one thing is that we do support startups within women's health. The other thing is that we have amazing founders like Julia here, who is a female founder. So the interesting thing is that we have not actually done a lot of specific things to support the female founders at BII. But when we look at the numbers, we actually have more than 50% of our founders being female. And we were discussing this with our HR partner the other day, where I was like, how can this be? Because we are not actually doing something bespoke for women. But I think the whole model of Bioinnovation Institute actually invites women in quite well without really doing it in a conscious way. And what I mean with that is that we have a program where you get a lot of bespoke support for each startup. Julia also has her personal anchor who helps her, someone who she can build trust with and who is the link between BII and her startup. And then we don't expect people to sort of have these crazy working hours either. We expect people to be ambitious, etc. But we actually have a working culture where you're also allowed to have a family life next to you, or being even a part-time student if you're doing a master or postdoc at the same time. Or in Karen's event, she was still a professor when she did her startup. So I think the way that we actually include our startups at the BII, within BII, is, you know, taking care of the specific person needs, whether you are a woman, coming from abroad, or whatever. I mean, it doesn't matter. So I think it's the way we look at founders, and that we want to keep them in a good place also mentally and in the work-life balance. But I don't know, Karen, you and I worked very closely together when you spun out Notify Therapeutics back then. And you had two daughters and a busy life and were still part-time or full-time professor. I don't know, how did you experience that? Did we take good care of you, or...?
Well, I actually have three daughters, but that's okay.
Sorry, but
so you know, yes. I mean, as you say, it's always hard to compare what different people do because they have different, you know, maybe side activities or different situations, and you know. But yeah, what did we do? I just, you know, I had my professorship, and I started sort of allocating 50% of my time, you know, to my spin out, and then 50% to the university. I really quickly discovered that was not going to work, because you cannot, you know, take on a biotech with all these new learning curves and new learning skills. It's not like you're just building on something that you know. You have to actually acquire new skills. So I quickly switched that, you know, balance a little bit. So I'm basically full time now on Notify, and I have a little affiliation kept with the university, just to have that affiliation going, and that could also benefit the biotech company. But it's I don't have a recipe on how you do it, but you will, of course, you will have to find your way in there. Right. And this is also, you could say, one of the challenges I find, and I still find with my everyday life, is this balance between all the tasks that I need to navigate in.
Yeah, but maybe Julia, not to take over your job here, Nicole, but I'm curious to hear Julia. She's quite new to BII, being a new applicant into one of our programs. And how did you experience that being a woman? Did you feel that we were taking extra care of you, or was it the same as everyone else?
I feel like it was the same as everyone else. I just I think that opening up this area called women's health opened up for women like us with new inventions for women's health, helped us show that it wasn't a niche product. Which has been like when you are out talking to investors, and sometimes you have to convince people that what you're doing is not just for a very small amount of people. So with a BII blue stamp, I see it has a huge blue stamp, and that in Scandinavia, in Denmark, it's a first mover move for BII to have this focus on women's health. And it's just showing the ecosystem that the importance of innovation in this area, and that it is super important to not only see it as niche.
Yeah. But maybe that's a good point, Julia. And maybe, Nicole, that's the answer to your question, what we have done to empower women. I think just having the Women's Health Initiative maybe sort of empowered both Julia and Karen also to a certain extent, even though it was not that established back then. But certainly Julia to take the leap and feel empowered or courageous enough to take the entrepreneurial jump.
Yes. So if we stick with this notion of empowerment, as you say, Trina, it's very important, yes, to differentiate between the equality question and the women's health question. But it is very much, as I'm sure listeners will agree, through the equality question, the equality conversations, that it has been highlighted how much women's health is lagging behind men's health within life sciences. So, as you say, empowerment, female leaders also coming to the fore, because if you want a job done, particularly a woman's health job done, who better than a woman? So each of you, what areas of women's health are more exciting to you? What propels you along in your day-to-day? Who wants to take it?
Will you start, Mai?
Yes, I can start. Yes. So I'm working as an entrepreneur in residence on a startup opportunity where our aim is to develop some novel and non-hormonal treatment for endometriosis with the ultimate goal to provide a cure for the disease. And I think endometriosis is a disease that a couple of years ago, nobody had heard about it, but I think it's coming a bit more to people's attention. And it's actually a highly burdening chronic gynecological disease, which affects as many as 10% of all women in reproductive age worldwide. So this is a huge number of women. It's actually more than 190 million women worldwide. And there is no cure for the disease. And the treatment options that are available, they are unsatisfactory. So there is really a huge need to develop novel therapies for these women. And we hope that we are able to make a difference for these women suffering from the disease. So I think this is a very, very important area.
Absolutely. I mean, endometriosis has been more and more in the news lately, and certainly at Pharma Forum, we get several press releases coming through on a weekly basis. Julia, did you want to share with listeners perhaps the women's health area that's of most concern to you?
So what AC Care is doing? Yeah, of course. We're creating a medical device to reduce the risk of perineal tears, to keep it short. So when giving birth, perineal tears is a big thing, and we want to prevent that.
Okay, and why is that of interest to you? Why is that a big topic in women's health? What does this mean for women if that's not addressed?
It's an interesting, again, as a I'm an educated industrial designer, and looking at it as what competition or what is best practice today, a hand is our competition. A hand grip that is done in Scandinavia and it has great results, but it just shows that innovation hasn't been thought of in this area. And it's a hand grip that is technical, so you have to know how to do it to be able to use it. So being able to create a product that helps this issue, so it's a bit harsh. I think it's WHO who says that preventing surviving pregnancy or giving birth couldn't be the marker of a successful birth. It's super interesting to look at. That's more for like in developing countries, which is also where we're going. But just realizing that a topic that is affecting women so much throughout the rest of their lives being so overlooked that we just are accepting having huge tears that goes all the way down to your anus is crazy. We just accept that.
Thank you. Karen, did you want to add for your part here?
Yeah, so my interest, so I'm trained as a scientist, so I come from, you know, from my own experience in the lab, and we have always been looking for many years, at least been looking into to how you mature a good egg And that is the challenge that a woman has, is that she's born with her sort of capacity of X in the ovaries, and this is what you have, right? This is your defines your female capacity, whereas men can generate throughout life. So it has always been, you know, really curious to me to look into something that is so difficult. You know, how do we look at the X, you know, when we almost have no X, and how do we do that? And we started to look a little bit to all the women who fail the standard treatment that is offered today, the hormone treatment and the IVF treatment. And despite the fact that many do come home with a baby, a lot of the women going to the IVF clinic do not really get the wishes fulfilled to get a baby. And we thought, why is that? Why do they not benefit? Even the young ones, you know, even those under 30, they don't, you know, the success rate is relatively low. And this was actually the question we asked, so something is going on in this egg maturation pathway that we don't really need. And we looked into the earliest phases, which is the non-hormonal phase, and kind of was curious about, you know, if they don't respond to hormones, you know, what would they respond to? And this is where the research started many years ago. And now we have found a solution that we are aiming to bring into the clinic eventually, to really benefit women who do not really have a success after the IVF, but introducing this new non-hormonal treatment that will help these women to also be successful in having their dream. And we also know that again, it's not a life-threatening disease to be childlessness, but it's definitely a really stamp on your day-to-day quality of life. Many women, you know, will experience depression, and in certain societies, there's also shame affiliated with not being able to provide a child. And so it has also a really huge impact on society in many different ways.
Thank you, Karen. So we very much, or at least the three of you, very much focus on female-specific biology. But Trina, I just want to go back to what you said earlier about some of the startups that the BII has helped, wherein there was a focus on neurodegeneration. Is that correct?
Yeah, also that. Yeah, the CNS or central nervous system areas, such as Alzheimer's disease. But I would say in terms of what I find most interesting, if I could, where we see a huge need for more research is also within the menopause and the perimenopause. I mean, we, all of us, apart from maybe one person here on this line, will actually spend around half of our lifetime in the peri or the menopause period. It's a lot. Very soon we will have around 1 billion women in the menopause phase. And it's an area that is so little understood and so little research has gone on. So if I could come up with a wish, it would be to have much more funding for research for women's health in general, and certainly also within the menopause area, I have to say. And that's one of the things we have done, is to carry out a large landscape study across Europe to see where the research is actually taking place. So we have now identified on individual level, all university and professor and researcher level, who is actually carrying out research within the women's health area. And it's so fragmented. It's so fragmented and it's so underfunded. So I really wish that we could get much more bespoke funding for research in women's health. If we have excellent science, like in the case of Karen and Julia here, then I'm quite certain that the rest of the value chain would come all together, because great science will drive great startups that, again, with great data and potential, will drive more investments. And then I'm certain we could also get more of the industrial players along the line and take in and bring products to market. So let's start with great science and much more funding to it.
Thank you for bringing up the challenges there. So if we think of those challenges and the wider pharma industry, perhaps we could just briefly address how each of you thinks that wider pharma industry should be encouraging women to become business leaders, and perhaps bring in some of the challenges that startups have faced, that the BII has faced in its endeavors also.
It's a very big question. Yes. No, I think it's a very big question, because what do we think will encourage more females maybe to enter things like we are in, or even go to the more big pharma industries to take on more leaderships and more roles in maybe promoting not only women leadership, but also research in women's health, which has a lot of unmet need, as Trine said. That's a different aspect that needs to be a bit separated here. It's a big question, and I'm not sure I have, you know, the right answer to that. But of course, I think one of the things that are really critical for going into this is that if you come in as a woman, you feel that there's an equity here, right? You feel like that there are equal terms for everybody who works in this company, or there's equal term for everybody who makes the startups, that you don't feel like when you enter something that is already biased, you know, prior to even coming into something. So that's at least very important. So you know that when you come in, you have the comfort that the terms on your contract, the terms of your salaries, the terms of everything else is equal to everybody. And that's even if they have a long tradition in having mostly males, or a long tradition in otherwise, you would like to know the comfort that, you know, most, I guess, would like to have the comfort that it has an equal terms of when you're doing this. And I don't know if it's something along that. And of course, you have to know that there are investors out there. But I think right now, as Trine also mentioned, the awareness, I mean, the signal that BIIs comes in, even if I started before that, Trine, but it was around the same time, right, that I started, when you started all this women's initiative at the BII, the signaling that comes from such a good organization that has, you know, really a high impact in society and also has decision-making power, you know, it's really important to signal to the world, or at least those who is affiliated with this kind of things, or and also the investors, that this is something that we take important, and that is really important for companies, not only, you know, earlier startups, but also companies like us who has been there for a couple of years now, that we continue to have, you know, strong partners saying it is important and we need to have money, you know, to drive this forward.
As you say, an even playing ground, and from a foundation of equality, which comes back to the largest thing, as much as we're differentiating between the parts, essentially it is a whole ecosystem. It goes back to what Mai said earlier today, which is you can't be discriminating against on this essential factor of the female, the woman. It is unacceptable, as she said. So to close out our discussion today, perhaps each of you could close with a pearl of wisdom for those maybe younger female listeners tuning in today, and indeed for our male listeners, to make it that balanced conversation. Who wants to start?
I can at least say that I think it's very important as a woman that you do find a role model or something, someone to mirror yourself in. I think this is extremely important, and ideally that you even create some sort of a mentorship, which could definitely also be a man, but someone who can push you on, challenge you, support you when you need that. I think this is extremely important. In my own case, I have to say, I was very lucky to have a mother who actually were my role model. She was so tough in the good way. She was a really strong role model as a mother to a daughter. So find your role model out there. And grab out. I mean, you can always reach out to us who are a bit more experienced. Any, you know, younger woman who comes to me and asks for advice and stuff, I always say yes, of course. So don't hold back. Just reach out.
Yes, and maybe I can continue on that one, because I think also for all people out there, not only women, but for all the people, first of all, to, of course, remember that it's important to stay true to yourself and to your beliefs, and that you shouldn't let other people come in and trying to patronize you or telling you who you should be or what you should do. So try to really stay true to yourself. And then, as Trine said, so role models are really important, but also to find somebody who believes in you and supports you. And it doesn't have to be a woman. It can also be a man. I've had a leader in my career who has seen the potential in me and who has believed in me and who has really been supporting me and helped me to give me opportunities to grow. So I think really this, at finding somebody who will support you and take you on the road, this is really important for the development. And then also really important, I would say, is that you should never doubt your own abilities, because you can succeed with so much more than you think if you only believe in it. So this is my pearl of wisdom.
Thank you. Julia?
I totally agree on the thing with the role models, and also acknowledging that not all role models has to be and act like tough men, or that there are other types of leadership as well, the softer sides as well. But one of my biggest things is that if people don't believe in your idea, it's more a lack of their creativity than it's a lack of yours. And I think that's just super important to keep reminding yourself of remembering that, as you said, might just actually keep believing, because there will be thrown some hard balls at you sometimes.
Thank you, Julia. And Karen, do you want to close us out with, it doesn't have to be the epitome of a pearl of wisdom, but close us out with yours.
No, I mean, I have sort of my advice sentence that I have used for many, many years, and I use it, you know, still today. And I always tell, you know, mostly students, because I've been, you know, spending most of my time at the university, it's, you know, just never give up. And it goes a bit along with what Julia said, never give up, right? Because if you get in rejection, it doesn't mean that your application was bad. It just means that somehow people didn't really appreciate it, or, you know, maybe there was another topic at this stage that was a bit more buzzy than what you were admitting. But you know, of course, when you want to make your way, you will have to know that a lot of people will be rejected along the way, right? And then you will have to improve and do it again and again. And I always thought, I never give up. And this is, you know, always, you know, when you feel like these rejections, it's a really good advice just to think, never give up and get back on the horse.
As you say, rejection only makes you stronger.
Yes.
As does failure. Yes. Anyways, thank you today, ladies. It's been a pleasure.
Likewise. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Likewise.
Likewise.
And so that concludes another episode of the Pharma Forum podcast. You can find out more information about this episode, including a download link and information about previous installments of the series at pharmaforum.com/podcasts. The Pharma Forum podcast is also available on iTunes, Spotify, Acast, Stitcher, and Podbean, where you can find and subscribe by searching for Pharma Forum. Of course, don't forget to visit our website itself, where you can sign up for daily news and analysis bulletins, and follow us on Twitter, or X nowadays, at Pharma Forum. That's all for now. Thank you for listening.